When you drive the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power, you can stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see yourself behind the wheel of the brand ranked number one in dependability by J.D. Power. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Kia received the fewest reported problems among all brands in the J.D. Power 2022 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study based on 2019 models. See jdpower.com/awards for 2022 details.
You're listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, and I'm your host, Liz Carlisle. Welcome to a fresh week. I'm so glad you're here, as always. And this week, my guest is none other than Lauren Fleshman. She's a former elite distance runner turned dedicated coach and author. And her latest book, which we're talking about today, is called Good for a Girl, A Woman Running in a Man's World. And it's been making waves since its release in paperback, shedding light on the unique struggles faced by female athletes and advocating for change in how we support and train them. In this episode, we're diving deep into Lauren's journey as a runner, her experiences as a major figure in women's running for Nike, and her insights on female physiology and disordered eating, along with her inspiring vision for a more inclusive and empowering future in sports for women. So whether you're a parent tuning into this for your daughter, or you're a coach, or you're simply passionate about creating a better world for young female athletes, then Lauren's perspective is as insightful as it is inspiring. And I love having conversations like this because even if your daughter isn't an elite athlete or yourself, there's things that we're talking about today that I think are often pushed down and assigned shame and guilt, like disordered eating. That's something that I've been really open about. You know, when I was in college, I had an eating disorder and I thought that I couldn't tell anyone about it and I certainly couldn't talk about it. And you would be amazed how many young women are dealing with this, especially as they get into sports or anything competitive. And it's just something that we can address and that we can talk about. And when we bring light to anything, then I think it cleanses it out. And that's my goal for this. And if you feel like your daughter is going through something like this or might be in the next few years, then you feel free to share this episode with her and definitely get Lauren's book. So I hope this episode brings light to you and some more self-awareness and understanding on how we should be treating our girls and training our girls because sports are so important and I think that they're wonderful. But we can't compare girls to boys. They're different, and how we train them should be different as well. So please enjoy this episode with Lauren Fleshman.
Well, hello, Lauren. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So to start us off, can you please give us a bird's eye view of the events in your life that led you to the work that you're doing now as a coach and a best-selling author?
For sure. Well, I grew up in Southern California and I loved sports. I loved moving my body and I loved kind of obsessing over a mastery of a skill, which is still something that is a big part of my personality. And so I ended up finding running as one of those sports and it clicked for me in a way that no other sport had. And it brought me community and like so many of the great things in my life, sports brought to me, but it also introduced me to a lot of things that are wrong and pain and suffering and harm done to people around me. And so that experience of being in sport for 27 years, first as a young person, and then as a collegiate athlete, and then as a professional athlete, and then as an elite coach, has led me to a life of advocacy work and using creativity and art to try to move us forward into a better place for women's sports, for women in general. And that's where I am now.
I love that. And in the book, you talk about, you know, when you were going through your very tumultuous time, that there wasn't anything out there, like a true story out there that you could cling to. And so that's kind of how the book came about. Do we still, I mean, as far as the conversation is still opening up about mental health and the difference, you know, in women's sports, where are we still lacking in knowledge? Where are we still lacking in awareness?
I think that there's still a lot of pressure on athletes to bring their best self, their superhero self, because they are in the business of superhero performances and like excellence. And actually there's so many common, even though mental health is more of an issue we're talking about now than ever, when you talk to athletes who spent their lives in high performance, once they're on the other side, they have a lot of unlearning to do, because sports still teaches us to kind of suppress our feelings. Only certain feelings and emotions are productive and other ones are bad and need to be kind of locked away. And some of that is for good reasons. I mean, the soccer match is going to happen on the day and time it's going to happen. And it doesn't matter if you're on your period, and it doesn't matter if you're dealing with a family crisis, and it, you know, those things don't really matter, especially in the high performance realm. You have to figure out a way to show up and be excellent. And so you have to develop these compartmentalization skills, but they don't really serve you holistically as a person. They don't serve you in your relationships, and your parenting later in life, if that's something you go on to do. You have to figure out a way to unlearn them, become a more whole person, a wholehearted person, and learn to live alongside like weakness, flaws, all. And I don't even know if those words are real ways to describe the entirety of the human condition, but you know what I'm saying? Like taking yourself as you are, learning who you really are. And we still don't really have a good handle on how to deliver sports as a product to kids and adults in a way that does that, that's truly helpful for people.
Well, I think I probably know why, because it is so complex, right? And you have people a lot of times with younger athletes who are volunteering, you know, and they are just carrying on what they learned. And there's never that space in our lives to kind of sit back and go through all of that and then establish something. But I feel like that's changing. I feel like the work that you're doing has really started a lot of conversations about this very thing. What's the response been to when you started putting out this work?
It's been a huge response. I mean, there's been a really positive response everywhere from a literary perspective, recognition of the book and the craft and the way that the messages were brought across, to the individual level of people saying, what I hear the most is, you put words to something that I felt in my body, and I never could like put words to it or fully understand it until you put the words to it. And that's what the job of a writer is in I think on their best day, is helping put the words to the human condition, helping us understand our lives better, our feelings. And ideally, in the case, what I'm trying to do in my book is help people rewrite their story of how they have viewed themselves, especially people who've been involved in sport, and had like some of the negative aspects impact their view of self and, or their relationship with their body or food or any, or those types of things that you then carry on to the next generation, to your kids. Even when you do your best, you know, you carry these things forward. And so it's so important to have a chance to relook at all of that, put words to your experience, rewrite the story about your own self and your identity and the people around you and women, and then be able to move forward like as a more healed person and as a person with ideally like more optimism, that we can create our spaces in a different way. Like we get to decide. We are the participants. We are the majority in that space. So we can make it what we want.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I can go in so many different directions from what you just said, but I think the root of it is this desire to really do the work so that, you know, if you're someone who's always optimizing and always trying to get better, that includes self-work too. Like that's just part of who you are, is okay, I've got this locked away, I'm good at this thing, but now I need to conquer this next level.
Yeah. I was curious when you were reading the book, like I always like to hear this from people, like what was it, is there something that kind of like made you rethink something, or I don't know, just kind of that you ended up chewing on for a while in your own personal experience?
Yes. And people are going to think that this is scripted because I have a passage read and then I want to have you comment.
Okay.
But no, this is in flow. I love it. Okay. So you write, I made a commitment to grow up and win and fail in public in my little world of running because I wanted to provide at least one person's accurate representation of chasing big goals for the next person who searched the internet during a low point. I hoped it would inspire other pro athletes to do the same, and it did. But the biggest winner in the short term was me. The more my life expanded off the track, the more satisfied I was on it.
Mm.
I love that.
What did you, how did you feel it like relating to you or your life, or where did it make you want to go with it?
Because I feel like when we go through school and do the life track, we're like, okay, I'm this person, this is my identity, this is what I'm doing. And mm-hmm. you kind of pigeonhole yourself and you don't deviate from that. And if you do, you might be failing or you might, you know, you might feel lost. And when I read that, it was like, you had found the truth of who you really were in your soul. And it had really nothing to do with running. It was so mm-hmm. much more than that. And I was like, that's, to me, that's like the meaning of life. You know, mm-hmm. it's like we're not what we do necessarily, our careers or our roles as mothers or daughters or anything like that. It's like that small voice within, like your true soul that just wants to create and express and experience life.
Yeah. And be like your authentic self. I feel like that's the coolest thing about middle age for me so far is that like I started my life as this expansive child, like, you know, children tend to be like, you can be anything, do anything, at least in your soul, you know, you've got this like possibility and imagination sort of drives everything in a child mind and heart. And then you learn how to narrow, how to specialize, how to find like where you fit into this bigger thing. And that involves like, as Brené Brown says, like armoring up certain parts of yourself or overemphasizing other parts of yourself to do that, to be successful. But like, I feel like for myself and the people around me in middle age, there's an opportunity to go, hey, I want to like re-expand. Like this isn't really working for me. This doesn't feel as good as I thought it would. And who am I really? And like, there's a reconnection to the things that have always been there since we were children. And if we can kind of do a good job of that and integrate that person back into our adult self, then, and however that looks like for me, it was the way it shows up in my book, but for anyone else, it's going to take its own journey. And then luckily, if you're lucky, you have another half or more of life left to kind of be in this more whole version of yourself. And sometimes that means like getting off the success, quote, success track a little bit, giving up some things that you thought were really important previously that you realize now are not quite as important. And then you get to surprise yourself and be like a beginner in things again. I don't know. It's just, it's a really great time of life.
See, I feel like you approach it with like excitement and curiosity. And a lot of people, it's terrifying. You know, it's like you don't even want to go there. And it's this scary unknown. What do you think holds more middle-aged people back from really rediscovering who they are, what they like, what they don't like, just doing playful work?
Well, I think that there's culturally, especially for women, we're told that we peak in our 20s. You know, as far as like, that's when we're our most beautiful. We worship youth. When we start to get to this uncomfortable place in middle life, I think there can be a step in the process of growth can be nostalgia for when you were younger. Like you might think of your 20s when you were more free. You know, that's like it can be filled with like sadness or fear, right? Like you're talking about. But I think that like, that's just part of the process and that's okay. But, we can reject the idea that as middle-aged women that our best is behind us and that becoming more and more liberated from what society views as like peak beauty or our prime as far as what is useful to society. Like we can decide like, hey, it's actually really liberating to become more invisible to like the mm-hmm. average male gaze, to like be able to spend less time worrying about how I'm perceived, or I don't need to like fight that battle to be that person anymore. And then, and that kind of frees up the space to just be who you actually are and lean into that. I think there's just so much opportunity. So I hope that my positivity is like infectious because I truly believe this. And I've seen like so many amazing, magical things happen in my friends' lives and tumultuous things. I mean, some people end up leaving their marriages or dramatically changing careers. I mean, there are hard decisions that if you're following who you really are now, that you may end up making. So, you know, it can be sobering, but you have a whole life ahead. So it's worth taking an inventory.
I love that. And yeah, and the majority of the people tuning into this are mothers. And I think motherhood kind of shifts you into a forced method of taking inventory of what's going on in your life. And so they definitely get that. But I kind of want to steer us back to the book because it is so amazing. And I think the message is really important. But how do you approach training female athletes, and how do you approach, you know, even what you're telling to the coaches that are coming up in the world now, how should we be changing how we train girls in a training system in a world built for men?
Well, I think the main thing that I would want people to know who haven't read the book is just that the fact is our sports systems have been designed around the male body. They were made by men for men and boys, and women and girls were excluded from them for the majority of our history. And we had to fight really hard to get access to those sports systems, but we didn't have a say in what they look like, how they're shaped, you know, what the routines are. And so what equality has looked like for us is give us what the men have the way they have it, give us what the boys have the way they have it, and then we'll know we're equal. Well, we've been doing this. Title IX was 50 years ago now that kind of mandated that equal opportunities be made available for girls in sport in our country. And now we have enough data to see that if you give girls what the boys have exactly the way they have it, they don't thrive at the same rate. We actually have a lot of research that shows injuries at 3 to 5 times the rate, worse mental health. We have a lot of amenorrhea and menstrual dysfunction that has a whole host of problems that show up later in life, like, you know, higher risk of osteoporosis in people that did sports versus don't do sports, which should not be the way it is. Those sports like running and weightlifting are prescribed to women as a way to build bone density. But something about the way we're participating in sports systems as young people is having the opposite effect. And so that's what my book is really about exploring, is like, what happens? Where are all the spots in this sports system built for a male body where when you put a female body into it, there's friction. It's not really working. It's not really serving them. And if I can highlight those from the youth level on, and this includes specifics with regards to training, how we deal with puberty, how we talk about puberty, what kind of expectations we should have for improvement over time. If we can relook at all of those and then rebuild sports around a female norm for female athletes, we will have so much better outcomes. And the most low-hanging fruit one of these is just this thing that I call the female performance wave. And when we think about sports, we're taught that what you get out, what you put in, work harder, get better, work harder, you get better. Like, it's this linear improvement, right? But for pubescent females, adolescent females, what our bodies are going through, what our puberty looks like, that is not a realistic or standard way that we experience sport, where we get work harder, we get better, we work harder, we get better. What's actually common is more of a wave where we start off getting better, then we plateau or even get a little bit worse as we're adjusting to our new body, our new adolescent body. And we need a little bit of time, like a year or two is probably about standard, although it's very under-researched, where if we're just patient and we meet those female athletes where they are and we don't pressure them to lose weight, we don't make them feel like these changing bodies is a negative thing or something they need to fight, and we just allow them to develop and then adjust to this new body, their ligaments, tendons, and bones will adjust to this new body, and then they will come out the other side and then start the rise again. On the other side of the wave, they will start the rise again, and they will continue to get better. They'll get better as they put the work in. But it's during these ages of about 16, 15 through about 21 where we see the most girls dropping out of sport, experiencing eating disorders in order to fight their body, menstrual dysfunction from underfueling themselves, and this war with their body, this negative feeling about themselves that can last a lifetime. And sports should not be an institution that is pumping out women and girls who feel worse about themselves or who have dysfunction around food and body for many, many, many years. It does not need to be that way. It's completely it's something we can completely change if we just change the way we think about women's bodies in sport. And so that, yeah, that's the main thing I want people to know. And you can, I wanted to write this book so there'd be a really easy resource someone could read and be like, oh, okay, this is what's normal for a female body during adolescence. And if a coach is saying something different than that, or my co-parent, or my myths that I've believed, like I can change those. I can inform a coach. I can hand them this book and I can stop the cycle of harm that's being created in this community and make sports fulfill the promise that we want it to, which is to empower our women and girls, right?
Yeah, I love that so much. And it is true. It's almost like a cliche. You see the old sports movies from the 80s and the girls throwing up in the bathroom and crying. And it's this whole big thing. And it's almost like, okay, well, that's the expectation. If you want to be the best, this is what you're going to have to go through. And I love that you're completely changing that paradigm and making a new way. And in the end, the girl is going to be happier and healthier because of it. It's not like, okay, well, I got to sit back and lose a couple of years now. Like this is no, like this is for the long term, the long game, and I'm going to be better competitive.
Absolutely. There 100% of women will be better and stronger than their 13-year-old self when they are in their mature woman body. In your 20s, you will be better if you stick with it. And so if you can develop like that inherent love of the movement of the sport, and then if the times aren't improving for a year or two, or whatever measurement you use in your sport, if you're not seeing that measurement that you want that shows that you're getting better, just remember that there are like a dozen ways to get better as an athlete that don't show up in that one measurement. You can always work on your mental game, you know, on your leadership skills, on strategy, on your vision of the court or your vision of the field. And you can work on those things while you're adjusting to this body. And then when the adjustment to the body comes through, you're going to take all of that improvement right alongside this new strong woman body, and you're just going to skyrocket. And that's what we need to have parents and coaches thinking about this as an opportunity, instead of like, you know, coaches will say things like puberty is a death sentence for a female athlete. They'll be like, oh, well, she's doing well now as freshmen, but we'll see what happens with puberty. Puberty is the one injury a girl can't come back from. And we have these damaging myths that are just wrong and completely like short-sighted. I mean, they're so inaccurate. And the only reason we have them is because sport was built by men for men and boys, and we're comparing the female experience to the default experience, which is a male body experience. We're comparing it to that. And if it doesn't match that, then it's wrong. It's not, it's just different. It's a different path to success. It's a wave, not a line. And yeah, let's let it happen. Let's let girls develop.
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh. We are almost to the end of time. We could just end on that because it was so well said, but to the mother tuning into this, or to the coach tuning into this right now, aside from what you just said, what do you want them to start doing today that can start to improve the lives of their young female athlete?
Well, I think educating yourself. I mean, then not just plugging my book because it's my book, but it really is the only resource of its kind right now. And it's on Audible. You can listen to me read it on a run or at the gym or whatever, when you're passing the time in the car. It's not very long. It's like 8 or 9 hours, I think. And then there's the paperback just came out, and it has discussion questions for your team, like a reader's guide that you can use it to generate these conversations. And I believe that that is the thing you could do right now that will completely change how you think about female bodies in sport. And then if there are other things I could tell you, but I've done all the hard work of like the research of putting it all in one place. But you can go to things like the Stanford Faster Instagram account pumps out like that. It's more of a data driven account that tells you exact things like the latest research that is female focused, and it's designed around health in sport. And it doesn't view health and performance as at odds with each other, which is really important because they are one and the same, health and performance. And so you could follow that account, and you could like do research online on REDS, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. You could just kind of go down that rabbit hole, and you could bookmark NEDA and National Eating Disorder Awareness, the website for that. I would bookmark that right away and just get on there and look, because it's like, it's the deadliest mental health disorder for women besides opioid addiction. And people don't realize that, because we've normalized disordered eating and diet culture is such a part of our life that we don't think of the harms that it causes. And we also, it'll help dismantle this idea that of what an eating disorder looks like. Because like you mentioned, those movies that we see, that these more extreme examples are just one way that eating disorders show up. And looking at that website, not for your daughters and sons, but for yourself as a way to investigate what is my relationship with food and body. Because as we know, as parents, like what we bring to our children starts with us and our own healing. And we all have work that we could do on body acceptance, on how we talk about food. Sometimes we don't know we're causing harm. I mean, I think that's one of the bigger feedback things I've received from people in my book is like coaches and parents will message me and be like, I've been messing up and I didn't even know it. And I didn't mean to. And I'm just like, you are not alone. You and millions of other people, like, go easy on yourself and you can just start doing it differently tomorrow. And I think that those are some things you could do right now. Just come into it humble and know that you're part of the problem, most likely too, because we all are. And so you don't have to hold yourself to some ridiculous standard. Just walk in humbly and be ready to help reshape it into something different.
Yeah. And then in the process, like, you raise this amazing athlete, this amazing person that turns into someone who's continuing that legacy, you know, because the whole goal has been ended.
And the vast majority of us are not going to be elite athletes, right? That is not the purpose of our sports systems. They have become, especially for youth, more and more intense over the last 20 years. There's a really great book by Linda Flanagan called Take Back the Game, which is another book that I would recommend people read about how money and mania have changed youth sports and what we need to do about it. It's very eye-opening. But what the point of sports is supposed to be is to provide an area, a formal area of play. Little kids play all the time. And then as you get older, you don't play with your friends, you hang out with your friends, but we still need to be able to move our bodies and play. And so sports is the way our culture has decided to keep that going for our young people. And it's supposed to set them up for a lifetime of movement, to like have a movement practice in their life, something they enjoy, and to view like a day kind of as incomplete if they haven't moved their body. And so if we can do a good job with them in youth sport, then as they grow up, they will feel like something's missing if they don't move their body, whether it's by themselves or with their friends. And that's going to give them a healthier life, better mental health, better physical health, a longer life expectancy, right? Like those are, and hopefully less adults that have kind of gotten burned out by youth sport that are now struggling to find motivation to move their body. They don't think of it as a positive thing anymore. And they're kind of think of it as like a job that they have to do. Oh, I got to go to the gym. And we don't have to feel like that about it. We can shift the culture.
Yeah, that's so true. Because I'm a person who's always like, if I didn't work out today, I'm going to work out tomorrow. Like, I don't even question it. And it's because I think I had that growing up. I grew up in a family that went on runs on Thanksgiving and Christmas morning. Mm-hmm. My dad was a Marine, so you can imagine.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, it's carried me through. You know, you said in the book, running was your home. And I think that's so true. And if you can give that to a child and they can carry that through their entire life, it's such a gift. And you're going to be smarter and happier and just overall a better human.
And as parents, we need to fiercely protect those youth environments. Like, a lot of parents now are kind of doing the opposite in this achievement culture where they're calling the coach and being like, why aren't you giving my kid more playtime? They're kind of like, because they're thinking of it as this arena to earn scholarships or this arena to like feel good about ourselves as parents because our kids are excellent in something. And we may be afraid to look at that truth inside of us, that's part of what drives us. And we're really worried about that end of things. When if we instead are really fiercely devoted to saying, hey, this is how I've heard you talk about food. Or here's these rules that you are giving the kids about what they can and can't order when the bus stops on the way home. Like, that's actually negative food culture. And, there are no bad foods, or here's a resource that I'd really love if you read, 'cause I know you're a great coach, but like, we're all like accidentally doing things, you know, that could be causing harm. And so, and it's stepping in and being uncomfortable in that way is going to serve our kids a lot better than stepping in and being uncomfortable in that my kid needs more playtime and, stuff like that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Wow. We are to the end of time. If there were one final message that you would want to leave with the listener today, what would that be?
I would just say, that there is a lot of changing your relationship with food and body. Since I did mention that we need to start with ourselves. That's a big part of my book. And it really illustrates what happens if you don't change your relationship to food and body, like drawing your attention to the cage that you build around yourself. And I just want to emphasize that while it does take some brave work to relook at your relationship with food and body and examine it and have flexible thinking about rules you've made or ideas you hold about body shape or whatever it is, how you talk to yourself in the mirror, it is going to be uncomfortable to look at it, but the life on the other side, like that life of feeling liberated in your body and looking in the mirror and being kinder to yourself, like it changes your entire life. If you're willing to do that work, is like so worth it. And you will glow in a different way that will impact your relationships with your friends, with your partner, with your kids. And it is scary to let go of the rules we've created, but that's all I want to leave you with is it's like very, very worth it.
Beautifully said. Oh, Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for this amazing book that you've put out into the world. I know it was a ton of work, but thank you. And it's beautiful. And I can't wait to see what else it does in the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and good luck to you with all of your endeavors.
You have been listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, where we navigate the beautiful chaos of motherhood together. For more inspiration and insights, please visit our website at motherhoodunstressed.com, or you can visit me on social at motherhoodunstressed. Remember, you are not alone in this journey. Until next time, stay unstressed, empowered, and embrace the joy of motherhood. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next episode.